sick to death of hearing things from you, running psychotic, short-sighted politician. All I want is the truth. Just give us the truth. I'm sick to death of reading things by stupid little punk rockers. All I want is the truth. Just give us the truth. I'm short-sighted, yellow bellies on a trick.
Okay, welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, doing this every Tuesday night right here on We the People Radio Network. And tonight I'm going to be delving into a very pernicious and disreputable topic among certain sensitive people in the 9/11 truth movement, but one that I really kind of enjoy myself. I'm going to be talking with a couple of pernicious and disreputable people who I also kind of enjoy. My guests tonight are going to be at the upcoming Science of 9/11 conference in Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm sick and tired of human things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites.
Enough of these crazy egocentric NSA people who are screwing around with our telephone connections on this radio show. What happened here? Apparently all phone lines just went down. Oh boy. Well, we've come back up. So let me pick up where I left off. I was just about to say that we have a couple of very fascinating guests on tonight. These guys are a little bit disreputable in certain quarters of the 9/11 truth movement. Why? Because they're out front with some cutting edge research that is controversial, and that's why they're going to be at the upcoming Madison Scholars for 9/11 Truth Conference, which is entitled Science of 9/11: What's Controversial and What's Not. We're going to try to figure out exactly what we can all agree on, like Building 7 was a controlled demolition, duh, and what we can't. What's with the planes on 9/11? And you know, this is a perfectly reasonable thing to do, I think. I think we need to get together and all, do kind of a big high five on Building 7 and then hear each other out on these other research matters. It's really not a big deal, and I think that 9/11 truth activists really need to lighten up and let the researchers do their research and critique that we need to critique the research in a friendly and also rigorous way. And so that's why I'm having a couple of the most out there, cutting edge researchers who have some of the best scientific credentials. Well, one of them does. The other has good economics credentials. And I'll start out with the first guest. He's a former Bush administration chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor from 2001-2002. And after he quit. He rocked the world with some statements about the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. And since then, he's been a big name in the 9/11 truth movement. That's, of course, Dr. Morgan Reynolds. Are you there, Morgan? Hello, Morgan. Well, maybe Morgan's not back up here yet. We're going to try to get him back up. Apparently, we had everybody on the phone lines, and then something happened. I hope I'm still on the air right now. I'd feel pretty silly if I were sitting here doing this and wasn't getting through the telephone line. Anyway, we are going to have Morgan Reynolds on. Morgan Reynolds is a professor emeritus of economics at Texas A&M University. He's a former chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor, and he was the director of the Criminal Justice Center, as well as a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis in Dallas, Texas. Morgan has some pretty serious credentials, and so when he started talking about the demolition of the Trade Center, some folks probably didn't like that too much. but those of us who were already on it were overjoyed, and I've gotten to know Morgan a little bit, and I have to say I like you, Morgan. I don't care what you have to say about those planes hitting or not hitting the towers. I think you've done some good work, and I'm going to really be happy to see you when you come up to the Science of 9/11 conference in August. So, hey, welcome, Morgan.
Hey, good evening, Kevin. Hey, I like you, too, and the fact that you're in error on a few points is just between friends.
Yeah, well, that's the way it's got to be because, you know, this 9/11 thing is so outrageously complex. It's so multifaceted. There are so many different areas to look at that, you know, nobody really has time to at least to do activism and also to be up on every last aspect of this thing. So, you know, I'm willing to allow people to look into particular facets of 9/11 more closely than I have. And to speak their minds about what they're looking at. And I think that's the least we can do. And then, you know, have a dialogue aimed at, you know, critiquing people's research. And
well, yeah, let's look at the facts as best we can ascertain them.
And you certainly wrote a very good piece on the demolitions. That's one that has certainly withstood the test of time for just about everybody in the 9/11 truth movement. There are very few rejecting controlled demolition these days. And so when they go back and read your articles on that from a few years ago, they look pretty good. Even your bete noir Jim Hoffman admitted that most of what you had to say about controlled demolition was right on.
Yeah, and it didn't pretend to be original research so much as putting it together in plain language. And I think I'm a pretty good teacher as well as researcher, so. He was mostly bent out of shape with my suspicions about the plane stories, which I hadn't sorted out nearly as well as I have since. And, Kevin, just to reinforce your point about let's be we can disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable about it. We've got to work, make, as in physical science, you've got to make the world safe for error. Actually, some errors turn out to be very provocative and promote knowledge, the development of new knowledge. So our first resort, I would claim, should not be, oh, that guy's an op or so-and-so's a troll, until you accumulate enough circumstantial evidence to prove it up.
Absolutely. You know, actually, the idea of productive error is something that was popular in postmodern literary theory when I was studying literature. And I think it's true. People need to be free to make mistakes and not, you know, not be, you know, raked over the coals. Especially, you know, with 9/11, we're faced with such a tangle of information that it's pretty hard to sort it all out. And, you know, I've read a fair bit of your stuff, including your essay in the new book, The 9/11 Conspiracy, The Scamming of America, which is edited by Jim Fetzer, and I think it passes the test as basically, you know, lucid analysis and writing. So I really wonder about these folks who don't want to even come to a conference because somebody's coming there who has a controversial theory.
Maybe.
Dave von Kleist was supposed to come up to Vancouver, and then somebody there said, "Oh, we don't like this pods on the plane hitting the towers thing. So because of one person didn't like him, they didn't invite him.
Well,
and now
yeah.
apparently Dave is kind of scratching his head about coming to be on the program with you, Morgan, because he thinks that his tweaking of the standard plane story is going to look crazy if it gets lumped together with your version of what may have happened with the plane. So why can't we all just get together and hash these things out
right.
and agree to disagree?
I mean, we're willing to go into the lion's den. If you're secure in your approach, why not? Look at Hannity and Combs and O'Reilly. There you're not going to get a hearing, a word in edgewise, so you just got to go in and pound it and stay on message, right, and not let them trample you.
You know, David Gray Griffin, as a theologian, I think had some good insights on the sociology kind of the 9/11 truth movement. And he pointed out that in religious movements, people with different ideas sometimes get accused of heresy, and that these movements split apart into competing factions that get very angry at each other. We shouldn't be like a faith-based movement. With the 9/11 truth movement, we should be a little bit more, you know, rigorously analytical and yet convivial and collegial, don't you think?
Well, yeah, and secular disputes, be they scientific or political, at least in principle, are resolvable. And the truth will out long run. Most of us are very confident of that. Error often wins round one. It doesn't worry me. The truth has legs. If I'm peddling BS, it won't stand the test of time. Now, I claim on this planes, no planes issue, there were no planes in all four events that crashed, and I can prove it up. And it's funny that, the burden is really not on me so much as the advocates. And if I can refute them with one fact, one false fact that falsifies the theory is enough that you have to go back into the workshop and reformulate it. And the number one fact, and there are, I got dozens of them, is the paucity of debris at all four alleged crash sites.
That's a good point.
These Boeings have about 3 million parts. And then there are their body parts, mail, lipstick, on and on and on. Where is this stuff? We're very familiar with airliner crashes, what it looks like. And
right.
none of the four look like that at all.
Well, you know, David Griffin, again, made that point talking about the controversy about the Pentagon. He pointed out that when a tin can hits the wall and it squashes, the mass of the tin can is still there. So where is the evidence that 100 tons of aluminum
right.
and steel ever was taken out of the Pentagon?
Yeah, the Pentagon is the clearest case that is close to a consensus, and the facts are so compelling that there was no Flight 77, and I would go further. There wasn't any Sky Warrior A4 either, because the same facts refute that. And, probably the two most important things that you could cite, top of the fact list, refuting the official account, would be, number one, the gash is on the neighborhood of 16-foot diameter. How can that swallow a 125-foot width 757, and it's about 40 feet high?
Right.
Gash is a problem. And then, to me, the next most important fact is, if you're going to contend that this plane, as officially, came in at over 500 miles an hour, you cannot land this type of aircraft. And that's what they're telling us. It landed at the first and second story, okay?
Right.
That's equivalent
to
Henry's
not
a mark on the lawn, on and on.
Have you looked at the Pilots for 9/11 Truth work about the black box data?
Yeah, I guess that's helpful. But it's hard for an outsider to evaluate their work, right? You can't check on it. But what they are saying is that given this official flight path, it couldn't have knocked down the lamppost and it couldn't have hit the building. Is that your impression also?
That's exactly what they're saying, and that would suggest that there may have been some kind of overflight if this is indeed a real black box.
Yeah, one of the, speaking of an overflight, one of the things that makes me maddest about that event is that it's acknowledged that this C-130 with Colonel Steve O'Brien in command overflew the Pentagon event, and then he's the same guy who was near Shanksville, and these some 19 or so of these C-130s are fixed all up with this these black box jamming and so on. And that guy, I was there in Washington, D.C., of course, on 9/11. And that guy, that lying guy, this really makes me mad for a military officer, said, oh, yeah, you really couldn't see because the East Coast haze was obstructing my view. Well, that's just an outrageous lie. That was the clearest day on the East Coast in the history of man. And everybody knows it.
So wait a second. Now, Steve O'Brien, you're saying he was piloting one of those C-130 airborne command
right.
and control planes. Now, what's the evidence that he was doing that?
The military, it was widely reported, but they acknowledge it, that he was diverted. And so they fess up that he was there. And he said, I just couldn't see the hit at the Pentagon, was his claim, because of this haze. There was no haze.
Interesting, because, that C-130, some people think that the official story conflates that C-130s flying over D.C. with the flight path of the alleged 757. Okay, well, we're going to have to take a break here, but we'll be back with Morgan Reynolds and hopefully his co-author, Rick Ratcher, in a few moments. Stay tuned.
Times are tough right now, but there are a lot of different ways to get ourselves out of this mess. Providing for our own food, water, and power are a good start. As you may have heard by now, Ken Solar has been configuring alternative energy packages for over a decade. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar-powered generator. For a lot less than you'd expect, this portable system can chop up nearly a third of your electric bill. Getting yourself onto solar power is one of the most liberating things you can do for yourself and your family. The solar-powered generator will run your lights, fan, electric blanket, your refrigerator, and a whole slew of household items. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos and how-tos, and, of course, the new solar-powered generator. Enter the GCN coupon code during your order and save an additional 10%. Get a solar-powered generator now from kensolar.com. That's kensolar.com.
Now you can upgrade your existing gravity filter to remove chemicals such as trimethylamines, atrazine, benzene, chlorine, chloroform, and MTBE to below detectable limits. Black Berkey elements are so powerful, they remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and transform water, even raw, stagnant pond water, into delicious, crystal-clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon-222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Berkey elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Berkey purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well thought out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at www.heartdrop.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
News, politics, cover-ups, government corruption. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
WTPRN.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
Okay, let's not tolerate any outrageous conspiracy theories like that 19 hijackers and led by a guy on dialysis in a cave in Afghanistan legend that they tried to sell us. Let's talk about the more commonsensical ones like TV fakery and no planes flying into the World Trade Center. Whoa, let's not go there. Well, actually, maybe we are going to go there tonight because my guest tonight right here on 9/11 Empire Radio are Morgan Reynolds and Rick Ratcher, and they've raised a little bit of controversy around those issues, and I see no harm in talking about them. Hey, I hear Rick is on the line. Rick
should be. Do you hear me?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Oh, sweet. I was beginning to think I was in a protective box over here.
Sorry about that. We had a little technical difficulties there at the beginning of the show where the phone lines all apparently disappeared at one point, but they're back.
No worries. I'm here now.
All right. So, enjoyed your piece. You guys are the joint authors of an article called Some Holes in the Plane Stories, which is in the book The 9/11 Conspiracy, The Scamming of America, and it's by Jim Fetzer, and I think that's an interesting line of argument to argue that essentially all four alleged plane crashes have little or no evidence to support them, and apparently a fair bit of evidence that they didn't happen the way we're told they did. In a way, it kind of simplifies things to see them all in that same light, whereas a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement seem to admit the doubts about the plane crashes in Washington and Shanksville, but they don't have so many doubts about the crashes in the World Trade Center. So maybe we just start off here. I guess I could just ask you, Morgan, how did you first get off on this tangent of the questions about the alleged plane crashes into the World Trade Center?
When I did this article that caught some attention June 9th, it appeared on Lou Rockwell, a libertarian website back in June of 2005, I explained that let's put everything aside that we supposedly know and look at the evidence from scratch. And I hadn't figured out the planes, but a number of things looked suspicious. I didn't trust the plane stories, especially at the World Trade Center. And I didn't know that much. I actually reviewed that recently, and I had a link to the Web Ferry. But I didn't know about Gerard Holmgren, et cetera. So I just, and Jim Hoffman jumped on me and about the first third of the article, because that was the chronology. You know, first of all, we see these gashes and explosions in the towers. Well, what caused them? I wasn't going to accept anything without a strong evidential basis. So I raised these questions. I didn't say there were no planes because I hadn't reached that conclusion. And then I went on to, if you will, prove or reprove, reword the demolitions, the inside job nature that was irrefutable. And about that time, that summer, it used to be verboten to talk about this. For example, Mike Rupert was one of those who said, you know, you don't ever talk about physical evidence because it's just disputed. It's one expert versus the other. And about this time, a few months later, I'm not taking credit. Some people say I'm an op because, at any rate, the consensus kind of congealed. You know, you can't figure out how these things are, but enough years had gone into this and enough evidence that it just became, oh, yeah, everybody takes it for granted, right?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting because, you know, when Rupert said that, he had a lot of influence at that point, and I think it really slowed things down because the demolitions are really pretty darn obvious, especially Building 7. It's one of the things you can see with your own eyes, and, you know, when people see Building 7 coming down, they often rethink their whole approach to 9/11. So I think Rupert was very counterproductive in urging people not to look at that.
Your intro had Ace Baker. That's my favorite 9/11 song, Blown to Kingdom Come. You know, if only because I'm known for the praise applied to this case, but it is based on a Daryl Worley country song.
Yeah, you know, I tried to popularize that phrase. I thought it was it had legs, and so anyway,
well,
you were...
come out. Hey, you were the one who coined the "come on out from the White House with your hands up."
Yeah, I thought that was a good summary of your talk in Madison, which was basically sort of a prosecutorial brief against the administration that you used to work for.
Right.
But Kevin, that was an important point that you brought up earlier, though, about the consensus of the trade centers becoming more popular around 2005, because for the first 4 years, you weren't really allowed to at these conferences to talk about even the controversial controlled demolition. But now, you know, if you're not talking, you know, controlled demolition, you're off. So it's like truth by democracy within the movement we got going on right now.
Yeah, and I think we do need to ease up on that. And it's, I think part of the problem is that the kind of the sociology of this has become sort of like a religious movement. You know, when people
right.
see the world in a totally different way from the other people around them, which happens when, you know, when people like, you know, suddenly get turned on to cosmic truth by some, you know, a guru or prophet or something, you know, then they wander around following that person and there's a whole sociology that happens where you have to be absolutely right about everything. It's kind of a, you know, if you're wrong about your this, you're a heretic. And that kind of mentality seems to me to really, you know, be kind of infesting the 9/11 truth movement. And we need to kind of relax and not be quite so dogmatic about
something. Kevin, let me take the other side of that, though, because this is not for sure entirely unfounded. And that is the perpetrators had years to plan this, and they would plan for the post 9/11. And you would certainly, although they've got control of the influential media, the corporate media, that's not enough in the internet age, and or alternative radio. So they would put people in place to lead the new 9/11 truth movement. It's only logical. I'm not saying I can go to court with this, but. We've got to realize that some people actually are operatives. It's not just the kind of the NSA key pounders on forums who are like they never read a Reynolds article or a Judy Wood article or Rick Ryder, but you know, they're tarring and feathering these people. So hey, there are ops out there.
Well, that may very well be the case, but I think we really don't need to waste our time worrying about them because I think there's a limited amount of damage that can be done by people like that. And, you know, number one, how competent a person can they get to play that role? That is, you know,
it depends on the pay.
Right, right. Okay, so we should probably be checking people coming to 9/11 truth conferences, you know, dressed in, you know, alligator shoes and, you know, wearing, you know, diamond jewelry.
Wearing a fedora.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I mean, to go back to that, though, I mean, at least for the first few years at these conferences, they would not let certain people talk about controlled demolition at these conferences. Nico Hopp was a big one, where they actually threw him out of his own conference. So it doesn't take much, because all you got to do is have pressure from the people running the conference to not let that type of information in, and it's a way you control the information. So, you know, the people at the cutting edge who were talking about controlled demolition in 2002 to 2004 were stifled by these people in the movement. And so we're kind of facing a similar type of
history, Rick, repeats itself on the no planes front, because Judy and I think under not entirely open, fair circumstances, got invited up to Seattle in October. And supposedly the 9/11 movement up there is in disarray or fractured since our talk. but Judy and I have not been invited anywhere. So, for example, hey, our names come up, or our quote, you know, space beam theories, or rabid no planners come up at Vancouver or out in Chandler, Arizona, but we're not there.
Well, you're the bad boys and girls of the movement, boys. I guess. Anyway, we'll be back doing some more talk with the bad boys in just a few moments. This is Kevin Nerd right here on 911 and Empire Radio. Stay tuned.
Times are tough right now, but there are a lot of different ways to get ourselves out of this mess. Providing for our own food, water, and power are a good start. As you may have heard by now, Ken Solar has been configuring alternative energy packages for over a decade. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar-powered generator. For a lot less than you'd expect, this portable system can chop up nearly a third of your electric bill. Getting yourself onto solar power is one of the most liberating things you can do for yourself and your family. The solar-powered generator will run your lights, fan, electric blanket, your refrigerator, and a whole slew of household items. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos and how-tos, and, of course, the new solar-powered generator. Enter the GCN coupon code during your order and save an additional 10%. Get a solar-powered generator now from kensolar.com. That's kensolar.com.
Government is best, which governs least.
Wake up and smell the fascism.
Being in government means never having to say you're sorry.
What part of unconstitutional do you not understand, George?
In today's world full of tyranny and injustice, sometimes it seems the only thing we still have is our freedom of speech. Exercise your freedom of speech by purchasing your choice of hundreds of different Liberty stickers, from humorous to serious, at LibertyStickers.com. LibertyStickers.com can even customize your own bumper stickers. It's time to stand up for what you believe. Invest in your freedom. Get your stickers at LibertyStickers.com for your family, friends, and community. Go to LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626. And express your freedom of speech today. Call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626.
Hey, Jack Blood here from Deadline Live with an urgent message regarding Ed and Elaine Brown and their brave stand against the IRS. WTPRN.com and GCNLive.com join together to organize and promote the Live Free or Die concert on Saturday, July 14th in Plainfield, New Hampshire. Aside from a day of great music from bands like Poker Face, Dave Von Kleist, Blue Eyed Fools, Paperback Radio, and many more, the true purpose of this event is to come to the defense of Ed and Elaine Brown. Friends, we're also in need of donations to cover costs of staging this historic event. Ed and Elaine Brown have put their lives on the line to stand up to the IRS's tyranny, so please give generously to help this concert become a success. Join me, Randy Weaver, and more surprise guests on July 14th and become part of this effort to defend the Browns, as it is literally a matter of life and death. Again, go to WTPRN.com or GCNLive.com and click on the Live Free or Die banner for all the information. I hope to see you there.
Listen to George Gordon live, taking your calls every Sunday night, 6 p.m., right here on We the People Radio Network.
Somebody dial 911, it's mass confusion, mass confusion, it's last. We losing Uncle Sam through a mass of tumors, and that's the rumor at least. It's soon to be seen, if the truth is the beast, it's soon to be seen. Fetching blood clots in the crude oil that runs through his veins and up through his brain. It's tough to maintain if he was low income, he'd already been gone. Insurance paperwork getting handled by Enron.
Okay, we're back. Yes, that's right, we're back with the bad boys. Morgan Reynolds and Rick Ryder at 911 and Empire Radio. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, doing this every Tuesday night, and I'm still a free speech guy, so I'm not interested in trying to ignore interesting, provocative, and controversial ideas about September 11th. My own are considered that in some quarters. So we're talking about the evidence that the plane crashes that supposedly happened on September 11th don't seem to have a whole lot of evidence for them, and there seems to be a fair bit of evidence against them. Well, you know, one thing that comes up when people consider this idea, Morgan and Rick, is that they would say that, you know, the perps in this instance would probably want to, you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. That is, they wouldn't want to be using a lot of unproven, relatively untested, you know, high technology stuff. I mean, you'd think that they would want to go with what was tried and true, because it's already going to be complicated enough. And according to this one line of argument, the simplest thing to do would be simply fly these planes into their targets by remote control rather than engaging in fancy plane substitutions or God knows what other kind of, you know, crazy hijinks to create the illusions of plane crashes when there were none. So why, you know, why do you think that, since you seem to believe the perps did not use big Boeings, why not? Wouldn't it have been a lot easier to do that?
Well, let me respond first, and then Rick, you chime in. They actually did follow KISS with this. There's way too many problems using real airliners. Too many things can go wrong. For example, suppose you missed the building. John Lear was on the pilots for 9/11 Truth, and the host chimed in with there were a couple of experienced airliner pilots on simulators that morning of 9/11, and they both tried to hit a tower at 500 miles an hour, and they couldn't do it. Much less these inexperienced alleged Arab hijackers. But the perps knew what the physics of this were, where you have an aluminum tin can basically with a couple of motors. What the building, a heavy steel building, is going to do to this? It's going to chew the butt. It's going to crush, crumple, torque that plane to nowhere. Yeah, I've looked at a lot of these crash. There aren't that many, actually, a couple dozen maybe, crash videos for aircraft. And you go in, you know, the way I like to put it is I've got a sledgehammer in the basement here, 9.5 pounds. You put me up on a Boeing 767 or 757 for 15 minutes, it will be unflyable. 9.5 pounds of steel. You know how many? When I flew up to Seattle, I was on a 767, and I was over the wing. I was watching it as we approached the airport. It, quite a ballet of actuators, you know, moving flaps and panels, and all over the wing are markings. No step. In other words, a 200-pound man can go up there and create some damage walking on that wing. Okay. So these planes, you know, they don't have any crash ratings, do they, Kevin? So they, and, you know, the ace in the hole for doing this way is they have control of the media. They can psyop you to death by claiming this is real and do a video fakery, do an insert. Rick?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with the keeping it simple. It's much easier to, you know, if you had to put some maybe shape charges into the wall, or, you know, if you believe the thermite hypothesis or any bombs in the building or whatever, they could already have that in place to make any cutouts they need. And FEMA was there the day before to do simulations of things running into the towers, so they could put fake blips on all the monitors, and they could already have the video edited it out. And again, yeah, to get a real plane and have that much accuracy. Again, if the plane nose, like, missed the corner, right, and only a wing hit the building, you know, and if the building fell after that, first of all, you have two problems. You would have to explain how just a wing hit in the building could cause it to collapse. That would be, you know, absurd.
Right.
And then you'd have the plane landing in some other place in Manhattan and, you know, doing all sorts of other damage. And so they didn't want that at all. So it's much, much easier to just do, you know, it sounds crazy at first sight, but when you really think of how simple it would be to, you know, fake it, it's actually so much easier. You don't have to deal with insurance. You don't have to deal with stealing a plane from American Airlines and having to, like, deal with them and all this stuff.
Right.
So
yeah.
there's a lot of pluses and simplifications that go about with no plane.
Yeah.
Well,
and
yes and no. I mean, you know, there's problems too.
They have to tie the airline penetration, quote unquote, and the subsequent destruction of both towers, which are awesomely strong. And it wouldn't do much good to run a Boeing in and watch it crumple and fall to the ground below, most of it. Now, an engine, it's true. If it didn't hit a floor, you know, if it were just right, could conceivably go right through a tower. But that's very improbable. It happened in 1945 with that B-24. But you got to hit it just right. Otherwise, the floor, much less the core, is going to stop all that stuff. So it would look pathetic to run what a plane would really do running in there. And you wouldn't have it all set up for the subsequent destruction, which supposedly was due to fires and weakening of the structure.
And Kevin, remember that even if it was remote controlled, if there was a real plane and if there was people on board, you know, if the plane was overtaken and you know, the people on board knew it was flying towards a tower or whatever, who's to say they couldn't just destroy it en route or whatever and have the, you know, crash the plane like, you know, allegedly that was what happened in Shanksville with the let's roll crap. So again, you know, you add so many variables at what could cause this to fail along the way.
Well, here's
having real plane.
Here's another problem you're moving toward, Rick, and that is there is no stand down order. Nobody will ever find a valid stand down order. There are too many patriots in the military. There's too much a defense that is decentralized. It's not true that Rumsfeld would have to sign off on an airliner intercept, et cetera. So there's way too many complications just in terms of an air defense.
Well, yeah, it does seem as though there was a kind of a procedure that led to in effect a stand down order.
Plane simplifies all that. there's nothing to intercept.
Wait a minute, Morgan. If there are air fighters flying around trying to intercept what they think is a hijacking, you know, because we did apparently, you know, the FAA people talk about, you know, the various notifications.
They never intercepted anything. And of course,
But if they were flying around looking for something and there was nothing there, if they're patriots, like you say, wouldn't they tell us that?
Well, there's a good question. Would they tell us that? Why don't we have an insider come forward with the truth? Yeah, here's my answer. You know, we were also happy, for example, when Stephen Jones first stepped forward. He was the only tenured university physicist that was going to question the official story. Well, look at what we've got here in terms of the science and engineering community. It's an absolute, we might as well have the Soviet Union in terms of the government having them all in its hip pocket for various reasons that amount to its career suicide to challenge the government on something this crucial.
And yet there are more and more scientists who are doing that, as well as architects and engineers. There's that new group, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And, of course, people in other nations have perhaps less to fear from the U.S. government. So there's really, there's no reason why this blackout in the scientific community should hold forever.
A bad performance so far. Go ahead, Rick.
Kevin, there really is, though, because are you going to get NSF grants and DOD grants if you're a 9/11 truth person? No. So... You know, it's career suicide. You basically might as well throw your funding out the door, you know, tell your grad students you can't pay for them anymore and forget being invited to talks or getting papers published. So, yeah, there may not be an official you're kicked out the door and fired, but you're really going to severely hamper a career. And all these professors, remember, they had to get PhDs. They had to put a lot of money on the line. They put years of work on this to build what they are. And, you know, they have a comfortable life. They're not going to...
Well, I know that from hard personal experience, because the engineering school at the University of Wisconsin lost at least $500,000 because I was not fired there last year. So anyway, we'll come back and pick this up where we left off. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Rick Ryder and Morgan Reynolds right here on We the People Radio Network. Stay with us.
Government is best, which governs least.
Wake up and smell the fascism.
Being in government means never having to say you're sorry.
What part of unconstitutional do you not understand, George?
In today's world full of tyranny and injustice, Sometimes it seems the only thing we still have is our freedom of speech. Exercise your freedom of speech by purchasing your choice of hundreds of different Liberty stickers, from humorous to serious, at LibertyStickers.com. LibertyStickers.com can even customize your own bumper stickers. It's time to stand up for what you believe. Invest in your freedom. Get your stickers at LibertyStickers.com for your family, friends, and community. Go to LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626. And express your freedom of speech today. Call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Hey, Jack Blood here, host of Deadline Live. I wanted to share with you my secret weapon in fighting the new world order. It's a new product called Enerfood. Enerfood is bar none the best health supplement I've tried, and I've tried them all. With many ingredients like spirulina, chlorella, dulse, kelp, barley, grass, alfalfa leaf, beetroot, orange peel, winter cherry root, it really is nothing less than superfood. I couldn't imagine having to shop and prepare all of these ingredients, but now I don't have to. Enerfood's done it for me. A simple scoop of powder every day is all it takes. No fillers, no miracle claims, no magic bullets, just a real product with real results. Call them today and mention Jack Blood and get a special discount. Get the two-pack special with the coconut oil powder. Call them now, 1-866-762-9238. 1-866-762-9238, or simply go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R, enerfood.com. Tell them Jack Blood sent you.
Uncover the Truth with Catherine Albright, live from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Monday to Friday, right here on We the People Radio Network.
It was a beautiful September morning. Now everyone remembers that date. World Trade Center worker William Rodriguez is lucky to be coming in late.
World Trade Center worker William Rodriguez is now touring the UK, I believe. He's running around Europe talking to good-sized crowds. I believe he filled up the largest mosque in the UK not too long ago. So, hey, keep at it, Willie. And all right, well, William Rodriguez, of course, did witness explosions in the North Tower immediately before the alleged airplane impact, as well as afterwards. And we do have all sorts of eyewitness, ear witness testimony for these explosions in the Twin Towers and also Building 7. And we now have new testimony from a witness who tells us that a massive explosion killed many people, and it was apparently pre-demolition work, went off while the towers were still standing somewhere after 9 in the morning. So, guys, let's face it, there were some explosions, right?
No, yeah, that's not, if you look at Rick Siegel's 9/11 eyewitness, sure, there's overwhelming evidence that I don't think is questioned by anyone that there are these explosions going on.
But I guess Morgan, you've been identified with this argument that some kind of high energy weapon may have contributed to the destruction of the towers. And this is where it seems to me that there's kind of a, you know, it's not an either or, but it's a both and. And it seems to me that Stephen Jones' arguments are actually stronger than you give him credit for, in that the evidence for these conventional explosives and for thermite seems to be quite strong. And, of course, that doesn't rule out the possibility that something else might have been used as well. So what's the fight about there? Is this all making a mountain out of a molehill?
Oh, no. I've helped Dr. Judy Wood, who's a Ph.D. in engineering, in what I call the dissertation project, which is still not finalized. But there is evidence that is overwhelming that something unconventional, call it outrageous, Kevin. You know, when George W. Bush addressed the United Nations in October of 2001 and says, let us not entertain outrageous conspiracy theories, what he's telling us is we did it an outrageous way. Now, what kind of evidence? Well, I knew about these, basically these 24-foot diameter holes drilled in the outbuildings of WTC, buildings 4, 5, and 6 in particular. But nobody had an explanation for it. And, of course, I think it was done by a directed energy weapon. That's what you're left with, ultimately. Then we have, of course, these some 1,400 toasted cars, some of them toasted in very odd ways. And, of course, there's evidence that we've used these directed energy weapons in Iraq. In fact, somebody claimed, now I know who it is, that we might have even, this is giving us too much influence, perhaps, but that they could take out certain facilities in Iran if they wanted to with directed energy weapons. They've been working on these things, of course, for decades. We all know about microwaves and laser beams, right? Well, is that where it ends? You know, they had the laser in the mid-1950s. So, and then there's this whole problem. If you go to our long paper, I don't see how any fair-minded person can look at all the evidence that Judy and with my help has assembled and not entertain this idea and find it compelling, in fact. You know about the bathtub, for example. You cannot have a 500,000 tons of debris falling on this bathtub and hope to keep the Hudson River at bay. They took all this into account, so that what they basically did was, in effect, disappear the upper 80% plus of each tower. You know where all that dust came from, Kevin? All those nanoparticles, 1 inch and more thick throughout the south of the island of Manhattan. What is that? That's a tower.
Well, that's right. There's the argument that if you packed enough firepower with conventional explosives, you could get a similar result. At least that's the argument I've heard.
Well, right. It just takes you a lot more, and you have to basically have it placed throughout the entire building where, you know, whether you look at the directed energy approach, as some people advocate, and there's other people that advocate mini nukes or whatever particular exotic weapon you look at, you need less of it, which is a plus, and it's easier to get in, which is a plus. So,
right. The question would be also, has this been tested as a way to demolish large steel buildings in the past? Because you would, as I said, you know, with KISS, you would expect that the perps would do stuff that's reasonably tried and true, that they know is going to work. Because if it really goes wrong, they're kind of stuck holding
the bag. They did learn on the job. That's why they did the South Tower first. We explained that. The top 300 feet plus, they actually had it tilt against the opening, which is contrary to what you'd otherwise expect, right? You know, they should have.
Yeah, that's pretty odd, isn't it?
yeah. But if you look at the layout, Judy explains this because they're going to do building four anyway. So you tilt it there, and of course, then they pulverized it. Even Jones, Professor Jones, remarks that, well, gee whiz, I don't know, it never did come down that way. once right. started. It fall on building four.
He admits that's a mystery.
It's not a mystery if you were to use some external directed energy weapon. Now, we actually get criticized for not having the serial numbers from the parts of this weapon. Well, we're not privy to the technology they have, but we have, like, 8-9 pages of proof that they've got directed energy weapons.
So well, there's a question
what they learned in 30 minutes about doing the South Tower, which was, in a sense, a little sloppier. They had to do this safe way. The North Tower was a bit neater, although they had, of course, some of the core was very stubborn, the so-called spire, which then dissociates it. It's steel turning to dust. People deny this, even though the video and photographic evidence is overwhelming, that they turn. There's not enough debris at the bottom, Kevin. You didn't walk up 10 stories on a debris pile, you know?
Right. It's clearly not a conventional controlled demolition that uses gravity to bring down the building. It's obviously being blown to kingdom come,
they
and you're dead in those immortal words.
Nanoparticles. They dissociated the stuff. It wasn't just the concrete. You know, in a conventional demolition, of course, you'd have all the material broken up at the bottom. And you didn't have any of this reinforced steel down there.
Right, and that means that there were there's a lot more explosive, destructive energy being unleashed than you would have in a normal demolition, and that does raise the question of the source of the energy.
It material that shouldn't unravel in an ordinary explosive.
Right. Well, the question is, what do you really gain by pushing this? There are some people, like I know Professor A.K. Dudney, a man for whom I have a fair bit of respect. He did state this in perhaps unfortunate terms by saying that, well, even if I did have proof that there were, no planes hit the towers, I wouldn't be talking about it in public. Well, that's obviously going a little too far, but there is also,
too far for me.
Well, me too. But also there's some merit to the Steve Jones position, which is, look, if I can prove, that conventional explosives or thermite were used, if I can prove that up, I've got, chemical tests here proving that they were used, I've got proof of arson, we take that into court and we go out,
Here's your problem, double jeopardy. You only get one bite of the apple when you're prosecuting people, and Stephen Jones admits thermite is not an insider-type product or even super-duper thermite. You can get it on eBay.
The demolition with it, of course, you have to be an insider to set up the demolition.
No,
with thermite
has never been used in a building demolition. It's a steel cutter, you know.
Right. He's just saying it's part of the story, though. He's not saying it's the whole story.
Well, it's a limited hangout. That's the bottom line.
I don't agree. I think if he can prove up the thermite, then you can, get a prosecutor and bring him in there and grill him
the real kicker here is there's two reasons why, if we're right, which of course I am, directed energy weapons are important. Number one, it's the truth. That's important on its own. I got my PhD based on that kind of noble idea, and I still hold it.
Truth will set you free, says the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, hey, sifting and winnowing.
That's
but
right.
Number two, only the United States military could have done it this way. In other words, there's no wiffle waffling about who did it. Who did it.
Right, but I'd say we're already long past the point of whiffling and waffling about that. We know that this was an inside job by people who had access to the special forces type units of the military and so on and so forth.
Kevin,
so,
I cannot be that cavalier because I want a prosecution, as you well know. And you don't go to court with the weak stuff. You got to go with the strong stuff.
Well, I agree with that. And that's why we need a free and fair debate to find out what exactly is the strong stuff. And that's what we'll be doing at our upcoming conference in Madison, Wisconsin, August 3rd to 5th. Stay with us. We'll be back for more in just a few minutes.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.